This week on the Nittany Dispatch, we discuss the coming and goings from the transfer portal and who has declared for the NFL draft. This week on the Nittany Dispatch. Hello and welcome to the Nittany Dispatch. I am John Sauber, Penn State football writer for the Saturday Daily Times. She is Audrey Snyder, doing the same for The Athletic. And Audrey, it is... It's been a day.
What day is it, John?
Right.
What day is it?
I don't know what we did to deserve this. And yes, I know no one wants to hear us complain about this, but just a way busier day than I think I ever thought a random Wednesday was going to be.
Yeah, a random Wednesday in January. Your seemingly random Wednesday, I should say. Yeah, this has become like transfer portal day. And I think for Penn State, it was kind of like, John, we were all waiting on this, right? Like, I alluded to it in our post-game podcast in Atlanta, got back from Atlanta on Sunday, and I crashed hard. After the bowl trip, I crashed, watched football. We were all spoiled by the playoff games on Monday. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to start making my way back to State College on Wednesday for my parents' house. I'm like, oh, there's nothing going on today. Just like leisurely make my way back kind of whenever. So by the time, and again, it's only like a 3-hour drive. By the time I left my parents' house, nothing had happened. By the time I almost got to Harrisburg, my editor was texting me and was like, hey, Julian Fleming's Nittany Lion. And I was like, hit publish on that story I filed 2 weeks ago. I do not remember what it says, but it says something about Julian Fleming picking Penn State. So we had that. And then on top of that, by the time I got back to my neighborhood, Dante Cephas had officially entered the transfer portal. So this is wide receiver day. Wide receiver Wednesday. How nice.
How dare you leave out Devon Lee saying he's coming back.
Yeah, that was later tonight. Yes.
That was later tonight. This was, like you said, it was a really busy day. You mentioned having it written however many weeks ago. I think we all did, right? Like, it's something you and I have been joking about not so subtly on this podcast.
It just
for
makes
a couple
sense, right? It just makes sense.
Yeah. And it was pretty clear a while ago that this was heading in this direction at the very least. But before we get too far into that, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Give us 5-star ratings on Apple Podcasts. Leave those reviews. Those are always very helpful and we appreciate them. If you're watching on YouTube, hit the like button down below and hit that subscribe button. That also helps us out quite a bit. But no, this was the day of the wide receiver movement, right? And the two that I was going to say the two that we expected, yeah, and one that you started to hear some stuff about after the Peach Bowl, that it was a possibility in Dante Cephas leaving. But I think had you said to me last Friday or last Saturday at noon, mm-hmm, that Cephas was in the portal, I would have been pretty flabbergasted and been trying to figure out, you know,
you'd have been distraught, John. Your guy in the portal, you would have been.
It is this. Listen, I texted you guys.
You'd have been down bad.
Group chat, Monday morning and said that in invisible ink and said I was meekly leaving the Cephas train before it left town. So
this
was coming for a few days.
I responded with the train going completely off the tracks and I was like, that's John right there falling off a bridge.
Yes.
Yeah.
But no, it was, I don't know. I think it's really surprising given how the season went, but not surprising given how Saturday went. And I think, you and I talked to Marcus Hagans. I talked, mm-hmm, to J1 Sider. We talked to as many people as we could, post game Saturday. And I didn't get a sense that anyone was particularly happy with how this went down with Cephas and him not playing. And so I guess I shouldn't be surprised when I started to hear things, Monday morning that this might be a possibility. But still, it's still surprising at the end of the day that a guy that started to come on at the end of the season, looked primed to have a big bowl game, mm-hmm, is gone a week later, less than a week later.
Yeah, I mean, to me, you're right. Had you told me this last Friday, even last Saturday morning, say that, hey, Dante Cephas is going to be in the transfer portal by Wednesday, I'm like, oh, no way. Because even a lot of our conversations on here, right, we're talking about the receiver core in 2024. And we kept saying like, oh, yeah, Dante Cephas, where is he going to go? He's not going to the NFL. He'll be here next year. Yeah, he's going somewhere, John. And it's not to the NFL, but it's somewhere else. And I think that's the one. It speaks to the era of college football we are in. but also it speaks to something fizzled. I don't know what, but something between Dante and the program certainly appears like it fizzled in the last week, because, you know, to go from, I pulled up the snap counts once I finished my drive and got back home today. I pulled up the season-long snap counts. Cephas had 324 snaps with the offense this season, which was second most among the wide receivers. Of course, Keandre Lambert-Smith was the clear-cut number one there. So you take essentially your number two wide receiver in a room that has many flaws, much room for improvement, much room for growth, was the storyline of 2023, and will carry that mantle into 2024, that burden, I guess I should say, not mantle. And now you take away Cephas from it, and you say, okay, well, what happened? What went wrong? And to me, I think back to where we were last winter, the night where Cephas commits, Taylor Stubblefield announces essentially that he's gotten fired, all within that same span, that same night. That was also a wide receiver Sunday, if I recall correctly. Definitely was. It was an NFL Sunday that they came for, one of it my was, beloved.
Yeah, it was wild card weekend because yes. I was visiting some friends in Virginia. And the reason I was visiting them was because the Eagles weren't playing, because it was the wild card weekend. I remember I was watching Giants Vikings. Got tipped off about the Stubblefield stuff, started working to confirm it, and then he just tweeted it. he just tweeted that everything had gone down. So yeah, no, Cephas was later that night. McLean was recent, right? Gosh. I think Malik McLean's commitment was right around then too. Or at least he had visited or something along those lines.
So I don't fully remember off the top of my head the McLean timeline, but I remember the Cephas thing, and I actually had asked him at some point this year. I had said to him, I said, you know, remember that night when you committed? I was like, did you know that Taylor Stubblefield was leaving? And he said he didn't know. And I was like, all right, that's pretty interesting. Like, you know, a lot of times though, players are kind of, you know, left in the dark on a lot of these things. But yeah, what a bizarre year it's been for him. I think that you kind of look at it, and I think a lot of it, John, goes back to last winter and the fact that he wasn't able to get here, right? I think had he been here last January, had he gone through winter workouts and spring ball with this team, I think this works out better. I mean, because we saw it against Maryland, right? Like, to me, we all thought that was like going to be a turning point. I mean, I know at that point you were like beyond the hype conductor, like you were leading the charge across state lines of like, this guy is going to be the difference maker. I remember my initial reaction when he committed last year. I was like, yeah, this is wide receiver one. Turns out both of us were wrong. Shocking.
Yeah. And listen, we usually disagree. So one of us is bound to be right when most of these things happen. But no, I think that that Maryland game, it felt like something had clicked right with him and with him finally getting it. And honestly, not even necessarily Maryland. I thought he looked much better in the last 2 weeks of the season. Than he had pretty much all year, right? Like, and I thought that he was finally putting it all together and was on the same page with Drew Aller, because that was a frequent issue. Something when you go back and watch those games, you see it a lot, the miscommunications. Aller spoke about that, I think it was after Illinois, specifically being an issue. But yeah, you know, you mentioned the fact that he only got on campus in the summer. We asked Marcus Higgins on National Signing Day, you know, the importance of getting a guy in early. And he went through a laundry list of things about how important it is to get a guy in January. And I think it was Greg Pickle of On Three who had then asked him, what did you learn about that experience of getting a guy in the summer? Like, how do you kind of fix that so you can speed it up? And he said, get him in January. He laughed and he's like, no, but seriously, get them in January. And so I think that that's the solution, right? You try and get these guys in as soon as possible, which, by the way, semester starts Monday, I think. Fleming committed today. I would assume he will be in class by Monday, or at least on campus by Monday.
Yeah, I mean, he has graduated from Ohio State. Yes. So he graduated in December. So he should be here this winter, should be a January enrollee. And John,
but these other guys that these other guys though that they're recruiting, that timeline's really tight, right? Like to get those guys committed in class and ready to go for the spring semester. So yes, it's very good that Fleming is in all likelihood going to be at Penn State this spring for spring ball, get on the same page with Drew Aller, all that stuff. Potential number one wide receiver for sure. But any other additions they make, and I think they have to make them at this point, who knows what that timeline is, because you're kind of running out of time to get guys in by January.
And this is why we always hear from James Franklin about the timeline, right? In academia, it's one thing, but in college football, it's another. And that's where you kind of look at these things and you say, all right, bowl game just happened on Saturday. Here we are on Wednesday. The semester starts on Monday. Like, it is a very tight, very condensed timeline. But going back to our conversation with Marcus Hagans last month, you and I were going down the rabbit hole asking him a lot of hypotheticals, as we should, because we kind of had a very strong inkling that this was coming, that Julian Fleming was coming. We did not know that Dante Cephas was going. But you, John, because I pulled this up in my quote sheet tonight and listened to the audio again, you, as the lead conductor of the Dante Cephas hype train, had asked Marcus Hagans a very fair, very valid question about Dante Cephas in year two and what he'd kind of expected to learn from him in year two. And I pulled that quote up tonight. And what Hagans said last month was, it just took him a while for everything to slow down. And hopefully now his trajectory continues to grow. He's a talented young man. I think he's going to continue to invest his time and, you know, really becoming the best that he can at all the little things. And I think that'll pay off big dividends for him. If you can get guys in January, it just gives them a better opportunity. So again, this does not sound like someone who knew that his wide receiver was not coming back, because when Hagans spoke to us, it was on the early signing period. That was a Wednesday. Penn State was leaving for the bowl game on Saturday. So again, I don't know what, if anything, transpired between then and the bowl game, but to go from number two wide receiver, coach is saying nice things about you too, you're hitting the portal. That's a pretty jarring turn for, you know, 12 days.
Right. And here's the thing. You can push it even a little further out, because mm-hmm. after the game on Saturday, Marcus Hagans did not sound like someone who expected Dante Cephas to leave, right? Like he said he hadn't had any conversations with Cephas about not coming back next year. And that if that was a thing, that he expected to have those conversations kind of at that point. And they hadn't had them. And it was 3 days ago, 4 days ago. And so, like, I think it's abundantly clear something changed, you know, sometime between kickoff Saturday and Monday, Tuesday, whenever this decision came down before it ultimately became official today. Because it can take up to 48 hours, I know, to get a guy into the transfer portal from compliance and everything. There's a whole process there. But I think it's clear that someone's mind changed, right?
Yes.
Whichever side that's on, who knows? But like, I think it's clear that, and not just did something change over the last few weeks, something changed over the last week in general, because we talked to Hagans twice in that time frame, which, by the way, is not a frequent thing where we get an assistant multiple times within a few weeks span. But both times, like the first time, I thought he was complimentary of Cephas. You give us the quote. Like, I thought even his tone, like, he sounded optimistic, right, about what was to come. And like, that this was it all worked out. And then he doesn't play in the game, and then he's gone just like that.
I do think, John, and maybe because I wrote about this on The Athletic after the bowl game Saturday, and you were there with me when it happened. Penn State's like, you know, I guess singing the alma mater. Like, we were stuck in like behind the stadium waiting to get into the locker room. Like, we were not allowed out on the field at this point. But you can hear the team singing the alma mater, and Cephas was already off the field and ran past us into the locker room. And in, you know, kind of in our head, or at least in my head, I'm like, that's unusual. Like, that's odd. Yes. Usually guys are out there, win or lose. And especially, you know, we're kind of all looking for him because he hadn't played a snap. And so it's like, doesn't play a snap, second person off the field, beeline to the locker room. And then he was not obligated to meet with reporters because he did not play a snap. So we never got a chance to kind of ask him, you know, what had happened or whatnot.
So, I didn't see him in the locker room either, by the way. So I don't know how, you know, if he was just not in the place where we could see him.
Our time was very brief in there, so I will transition on here. I will say, John, I do think this is a much better Penn State receiving core if Dante Cephas is here with Julian Fleming. I firmly believe that. Yes. I know you would believe that, right?
Right. Well, here's the thing. I am very curious to see where he lands. There are some destinations that make sense, like regionally. Also, his former head coach has a head coaching job at San Diego State now, and Sean Lewis. So, like, maybe that's an option. I don't know. Like, I'm not going to pretend to be in Dante Cephas' head. But I do think, like, if he goes somewhere else and produces, like, that's not a great look, right, for Penn State and how this year transpired, especially because they so desperately needed production from that position. And they got none of it. And you mentioned, like, it's a better receiving core with him and Fleming. Like, you get Fleming, it almost sets up. Now, by the time Fleming officially announced, we were all expecting Cephas to go in, right? Like, it was had been reported that he was expected to go in and all that. But, like, if for that brief moment before Cephas was actually in the portal, it was like, this is kind of the pecking order that you would hope for. Fleming is a one. Cephas is a two. Keandre Lambert-Smith is a three. Who, by the way,
we don't know.
Still hasn't made an announcement on either way. We know whether he's coming back, whether he's leaving, what have you. That's, I think he's the last guy that we're kind of waiting on some kind of Hakeem Beamon too. Is the other one who shows a year of eligibility.
You know,
who
did, hasn't announced anything. I was thinking of this today, John, because, you know, it's like we have to track everyone now and if they're coming or going. Did we
no,
ever
that's just get... us being antagonistic.
No. It is the job here in 2024, as it was in 2023 and 2022. Do we know if Sal Wormley is coming back? Because that's one I was thinking about, and I remember asking him ahead of senior day, and he didn't, like, have a decision then, and I do not know.
I don't think we got an answer. I'm honestly, with a lot of guys, I am generally, unless, how do I phrase this?
Uh-oh.
Unless I have reason to be considering whether or not they are coming back or not, they're just kind of not top of mind, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's probably why Sal Wormley, I kind of expect him back. I don't know. I'm not reporting anything.
No idea. Clear, but
yeah. It makes sense. But I think that's the case with a lot of these guys, right? That, like, where you kind of push in your mind, you push them to the side where you don't have to consider what their plan is with that COVID year and what have you. But no, I think, like, to get back to the receivers, they had a pecking order that worked, and now you don't have a number two again. And now someone's got to step up in the room. Like, Trey Wallace makes a lot of sense, but
stay healthy. Right.
Like, and it's not his fault. Like, I don't even think he's injury prone. Like, these injuries have been bad luck, right? Like, it's unfortunate that these things have happened to him. Jaywon Sider was very complimentary of him after the game. When I asked him about, you know, what went wrong at wide receiver, essentially he said that a lot of guys just need to grow up. Right. And that's it. They're adults. They were recruited highly and all that. And then he said that. And then he said, that's why you appreciate a guy like Trey, because they just need to get him healthy and they hope he can be a leader. You know what I mean? Heading into next year. And so I think that's a clear sign of how high they are on Trey Wallace. Theo Johnson called him the number one receiver.
Was cooking Kalen King in the preseason, John, had he told us that in the preseason, I don't know how fans would have responded, because I feel like that would have been
not well.
Oh my God, they have a good receiver, and holy shit, there's a meltdown coming with the defense, right? Like,
I think it's a little this, a little of that.
Yeah. So it was, like, good that Theo probably held that one off for bowl week for us. But I do think you're right in that they have something with Trey Wallace that they like. And if they can just keep him healthy, I think they have something there, and they strongly, I mean, because again, to hear what we're hearing from so many coaches, from so many teammates, it's a little unusual. Like, you don't often hear that much praise for one guy, especially when he's had limited opportunities. And even, you know, I think back to the spring, we heard a lot about him then. And so to me, in my mind, again, we don't know what Keandre Lambert-Smith is going to do. I mean, the way he faded late in the season, John, there's a very strong case to make that he should come back, but there's so many factors at play with these decisions that you can never figure them out. You can never guess these things. I have no idea what he's going to do, but I think
And he had no interest in divulging what he was going to do or divulging anything.
Right. And so we really haven't had much of a conversation with him probably in more than a month for sure.
It's almost 2 months.
It's been a while since we've actually heard from him. So again, I have no idea. Not a mind reader, despite what some might think. I am not a mind reader.
Throw that on the resume.
Yeah, that's like bullet point one, right? But I do think when you look at what they're building with this receiving core, and I'm with you, they need to keep adding to it. I think the magic number was at least two transfer portal receivers this offseason. You got one, and it makes a ton of sense in Julian Fleming. But also, John, what in the world are they going to get out of Julian Fleming? Like, I'm fascinated by this because We know the blocking abilities, but I wrote in my story that'll be going up tonight on The Athletic, just because we don't really fully know what's in this room. He's their number one right now, I think, day one stepping in here. And you add in the fact, which I think works in Fleming's favor, okay, he'll be here this winter. That's great with Drew Aller. But everyone is going to learn this new offense together, this Coach K offense together, this winter. And I think there's value in that because we can't say, oh, Julian Fleming's playing catch-up because he's learning this offense at the same time as Harrison Wallace, at the same time as Drew Aller. Like, to me, there's kind of going to be some benefit to that.
Yeah, I you know, it's kind of a level playing field for all those guys, right? And I haven't got a chance. I've been watching a lot of Tom Allen defensive stuff lately. I am who I am.
That's a sick choice there.
Yeah, we'll get to that at some point in this offseason too. But with Fleming, I've been trying to, you know, intersperse some of that into what I've been watching. And, like, I'm not there yet on him being a true number one. But I do think there's reason to believe that the biggest thing that held him back was health. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to say what I was about to say.
You're not going to be the hype train conductor for this guy. Is this what you're telling me? Am I going to have to lead the train on this guy?
No, not yet. I'll tell you after the podcast, okay, what I was going to say. And I will tell our listeners after the, you know, down the road when we do some in-depth stuff on Fleming, what I was about to say there, because I will not forget it, but
I do think there's
a reason to believe that there's upside to be tapped into here, which is interesting because I think out of high school he was more polished than most receivers and then kind of stuck around that level a little bit. I do think he's obviously gotten better since he got to Ohio State.
Are you trying to pour on Brian Hartline here, John?
No, what I'm saying is I think there's a reason for optimism, right? That there's more to tap into here. I do think that they need Trey Wallace to be able to be a starting level receiver. I do think they need to add someone else too. Even if Keandre Lambert-Smith decides to stay at Penn State, I still think they need a fourth receiver that you can rely on, right? Someone, it doesn't necessarily have to be a Fleming type or anything like that, but someone who was willing, like maybe a sophomore, and so willing to come in, rotate, and then step up when Fleming leaves the following year. But I think they need four guys at least that they can trust, especially because with Wallace's health stuff, you just never know, you know what I mean? When he misses a game, suddenly you're asking guys to step up that aren't ready for that rule. Or, frankly, they just need one of those guys to step up, right? You look at Caden Saunders. You look at these other Amari receivers. Amari Evans. Like, they need one of those guys to step up, or they're going to have to add a second guy. And then if Lambert-Smith leaves, you might have to add a third guy. You know, like, they really need to tap into this and rework what this room looks like. The other aspect I think has been talked about a lot, how good of a blocker that Fleming is. Mm-hmm. It's been, you know what I mean? It's very clear. One of the first things that stand out when you watch him. But for all intents and purposes,
you're not bringing him here to block, just to block. No.
Well, he might be blocking a lot in this Kotelniki offense, but I do think he's a very good leader from talking to some people about him. Mm-hmm. And that it'll get underplayed. People will be like, who cares about that? They want to see the production on the field. I think that is massive for this group. Like, this wide receiver group needs leadership.
John, you and I, we are on the same wavelength on this because I have pulled a quote. I've done some homework here. I've done some research. And by research, I mean I was writing a story frantically before we've done our podcast. And if you recall, when we had Marcus Hagans on that signing day presser, and then you and I kind of torpedoed it with our future wide receiver questions, as we tend to do. One of the things I asked him, because again, coaches cannot name players by name until they sign, right? So I had to kind of pull into my bag of tricks here, dig in there, and ask a hypothetical. And I asked Marcus Hagans, hypothetically, what could an older wide receiver add to his room? And what he said was, direct quote, older players add wisdom. They add leadership. They add understanding of what it means to be successful in college because they've been there longer. Is your room young and does it need older guidance and leadership, or is the room established and you just need more guys to create competition? I think it's just a matter of what that room needs on a year-to-year basis, but older players normally can add a lot of value on the field, but as much off the field as well. I'm with you. I think this room desperately needs a leader. I think that became abundantly apparent down the stretch, and I say that because after a game in which a wide receiver does not catch a pass into the fourth quarter and your number one wide receiver doesn't want to answer questions and your number two wide receiver didn't play a snap, like, that tells me from the outside looking in that there is some kind of disconnect in that room. Again, I could be wrong, but that is just me reading tea leaves of kind of what that room looks like. And I think you and I, we talked about on the postgame podcast, you look at leaders on this offense in 2024, Nick Singleton and Catron Allen are never going to be those vocal guys. Drew Aller has some work to do in that regard. He even said so himself after the game, right? That's not him. We can look to the offensive line. I think Nick Dawkins, the center, will be one of those guys. But he's going to be a first-time starter, so there's a big difference there. So I do think that leadership capability that Fleming brings is important. I also think, John, there is value in that this guy has played in big games, right? He's been in the big moments. We can say what we want about his stat line and all these things. He's been in big moments, and there's absolutely value in it. And if you're Penn State, I 1,000% understand why you take a one-year flyer on this guy. And if you're Julian Fleming from Catawissa, Pennsylvania, I absolutely understand why you see Penn State as a really intriguing option. Just makes sense.
Yeah, I think a lot of it lines up, right? And it's not like there's no production, right? Like, it's not like this is a guy who hasn't done anything before. Last year in the college football playoff semifinal, he had 5 catches for 71 yards. You know, that is relevant. That's a very big good moment. Georgia defense. Yep. Yeah, it's a very good Georgia defense that he did that against. I just think people need to understand what kind of player that they're getting, right? That this isn't – I don't think this is going to look like a traditional number one receiver like Marvin Harrison Jr., big, fast, you know what I mean?
Stud. You know,
all that stuff.
Emeka Buka.
Yeah, Fleming is very strong and is going to be really strong at the point of the catch. He's a good route runner. Like I said, there's more to dive into there, but I do think he's going to do the kind of stuff that you want, that the Penn State fans have wanted from a receiver this year, right? Be reliable, to be consistent, the kind of things they haven't had all season long. And I just wonder how much different this year could have been if they had had anyone willing to play like he did. You know what I mean? A single guy step up into that role and be that type of wide receiver that essentially they didn't have all year. You know, and I mentioned the injuries hampering him. Like, that is – there's reason for optimism with the production from that standpoint too. But this is a guy that – he was playing behind, like, Marvin Harrison and Emeka Egbuka. He's playing behind, like, elite receivers consistently. Kind of not his fault. Like, there were – like, Garrett Wilson was there. Chris Olave was there. This is a loaded wide receiver room consistently at Ohio State that he wasn't – it's not like he was seventh on the depth chart, right? Like, he was seeing the field, and he was playing, and they clearly valued him. And so I'm curious to see what it ends up looking like in the end. But yeah, I think this is probably going to be their biggest portal addition, just because it can change the culture. Even if somehow they go get a receiver that's like if I'm not saying this is going to happen,
McClain type, like, right?
If like Evan Stewart commits from Texas A&M, I don't think it's going to happen, to be clear. But if someone like that comes in, it still might be more important that they got Fleming, because it sets the tone for a room that desperately needed the tone set for it.
Yeah, and this is, you and I talked about it on the postgame podcast, right, of how appealing is Penn State for a transfer portal wide receiver, right? Like, that's the thing we don't know, and I think that's where Andy Kotelnicki is valuable, right? Invaluable, I guess we could say at this point, because you're able to pitch to these prospects, hey, this is what we're trying to build here. But I do think the timing piece is critical. Get him here as soon as possible. Get him working with Drew Aller. Hell, get him living with Drew Aller if that's how this goes, right?
Do we know who Drew's roommate is? Like, we've talked about this before, I think.
I don't know if he has. I think he was with Caden Saunders, like, I was freshman, say, and sure then they was, separated. Yeah. I think, I don't know if he had one this year, honestly, but I do think there's value in, actually, they might have had him with Cephas for a while. I don't know, but
I was gonna say I thought it was
if Cephas. That maybe it didn't work that. Out. maybe don't have them room together.
Yeah, put Julian in a different building.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, to me, like, there's that whole piece of how does someone acclimate to a program, and like, let's be honest. I mean, Julian Fleming is going to be here for a year tops, right? Calendar year tops, and that's so different. And you know, you've got someone who is accustomed to doing things one way and doing them one way for Brian Hartline, which is a good thing to have, right? Like, this is not a problem. This guy was trained by someone who is what we consider probably the best wide receivers coach in college football. John looks like he wants to push back on me on that. You know, you're agreeing with me. No.
No, I think it's...
So oh, we're giving Heartline too much love now. Is that what this is, John?
No, I think it's like, look at it, Washington, which Marcus Shepard and everything. Like, yeah, there's sure. competition for this mantle. This is not like clear cut to me.
Marvin Harrison Jr. would like a word, but also
I think I could have coached Marvin Harrison Jr. in college, and it's probably going to go this way. I don't know if you know this. There is someone who had that namesake who was also pretty good at receiver, who I'm guessing helped him out quite a bit in that regard.
Sure, John. Sure, I'll let you have that one. But had you been coaching Dante Cephas this year, who knows how things go? Who knows?
Poorly, incredibly poorly for everyone. I would have been fired months ago.
I tell you what was jarring to me. This is not going to make Penn State fans feel good, but I will say it. Watching the playoff, you know, the semifinal games on Monday, watching other receiving corps compared to Penn State. I mean, it is, and I remember, you know, during the sanction era, and again, it was a different ball game then, so you could justify it. But I just remember watching games, and it's like, this is not what I'm spending most of my life watching, because we're watching so much Penn State, because that's our job. And you watch someone else, and you're like, oh my God, like, this is what it's supposed to look like. I definitely had that feeling watching Washington Monday night, especially.
In Texas, like, Adonai Mitchell and Xavier Worthy are awesome.
Teams that can just score at will. And I'm like, man, I was used to watching rock fights all year. Like, oh, I forgot. This is what it's supposed to be like.
Well, it was funny, though, even as for as awesome as a game of a game, the first one was, I kind of that felt more like what we watched this year. Right. Mm-hmm. Like,
yes,
Bama, Michigan felt like in line with it because Jermaine Burton's good and Isaiah Bond's good. But like, there's no one like those are not Roma Dunes and Xavier Worthy and Adonai Mitchell. Yeah. Like, they were closer to now they were much better than any of Penn State's receivers, but they were closer to these are good receivers, and you could still tell how, you know, drastically different it was. Like Roman Wilson for Michigan, yes, like it looked really good in that game. Like then you turn on the next game comes on after, I should say, and you're looking at Adunes, McMillan, Polk, just on Washington, right? And just those are just the top three guys. There are more coming behind them than Mitchell and Worthy. All five of those guys would be wide receiver one at Penn State, no questions asked. Like, and you know, they would be wide receiver ones a lot of years for a lot of teams, to be fair. But like, there is that, like, when Washington's third best receiver is clearly Penn State's best receiver if he's on that roster, I think it shows you the disparity in kind of what those offenses were working with respectively.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think too, you look at it and then you turn on the Peach Bowl tape and you sit there for 3 hours until the Penn State wide receiver even catches a pass. Like, that is just, it's jarring, but that's kind of, that's the starting ground. That is where they are at. That's what they have to overcome. Obviously, all these rosters are going to change. And they're going to change significantly. But Washington does come here in 2024. Again, drastically different Washington team, for sure, that will come here. But that was also something that was kind of running through my head, you know, as I'm looking at it, and I'm kind of like, oh, yeah, Big Ten's going to be well represented in the national title game. And then you're like, well, down the road, that's definitely a Penn State problem. Obviously, they don't play Michigan next year, so
you have this. Who knows who Michigan's head coach is going to be next year?
Well, I feel like Michigan is going to be at a reset, right? And I do think you look at
Washington will be too, for what it's worth, because the Dunes is leaving for sure, and like Penix is gone, and Penix, like, I mean, I think you and I both had him third on our Heisman balance, like every bit of like one of the three best players in the country, you know, regardless of position when he's out there, just was phenomenal against Texas. But Penn State doesn't have to worry about that anymore. They don't have to. I do think Oregon's probably a bigger issue next year, but they don't play Oregon. You know what I mean? They're the only West Coast team they don't play. So like there is there's a window here. Man, what despite do you some of that.
What do you think this looks like for Julian Fleming going against his old team in Beaver Stadium this year, 2024? That'll be interesting. That'll be fun. It'll be a fun little storyline.
Honestly, like we're coming up on a really important year for Penn State. Mm-hmm. From an outside perspective, this is a lot of fun, right? Like this is the trips, now they're long. not necessarily looking to travel to West Lafayette and Madison, and I am looking to travel to Los Angeles, but like not necessarily looking to all these long trips Purdue. Every year. We got to go to Minnesota too. It's tough. But like it'll be fun. Like it'll be a test for Penn State. They're fun road games to go watch for you and I.
A test of our patience on the road. And always. I think too, John, it's you and I were talking about this before we started recording. Like we do not know what this team's going to look like next year. New OC, new DC. a quarterback that looks like he needs to hit the reset button, a receiving core that's already hitting the reset button, an offensive line that's full of transitions. Like, this is going to be pretty interesting to kind of follow all winter, all spring, all summer, just because there's so many moving parts. And that, again, for our job, we root for stories and we root for storylines, and we've got a lot of new stuff to work with, which is nice, because for the love of our sanity, I don't know how many more wide receivers aren't up to the task stories I can write just yet.
And for my first 2 years on the beat, you were writing about Sean Clifford and like the flaws of him playing quarterback, and like, I'm gonna be honest, we were all writing a lot of the same stuff over and over again, right? Like,
and then he takes a snap for the Packers on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
And throws a deep ball, and Rasheed Walker was his left tackle. And I was absolutely like, I was already tired from the travel and sitting on the runway for 3 hours Sunday morning. I was thrown for a loop on New Year's Eve when I saw that. I was completely sober watching this, and I was just like, oh my God, what is happening? But John, speaking of what is happening, Penn State's we do know someone who will not be here in 2024. Not much of a surprise, but Kalen King did announce in one of the days after the bowl game, because they all just blend together for me, but he announced that he's moving on to the NFL, which is what we expected because he opted out of the bowl game. No surprise.
And from talking to people in the NFL, what he should have done.
100%.
Like, this was the correct decision. I don't know that he will be a first-round pick. I tend to think he will still. It might still be an early day two thing
first
for him.
First or second-round guy, I think. I think probably more of a second. But again, all it takes is one team, as we found out top, with John Clifford last year in the fifth round. I digress.
Yes. But I think top 50 pick in all likelihood. This is the right decision. I think it would be a little out there to criticize the decision. I understand with some people thinking he didn't play as well this year. I don't think anything's changing if he comes back for another year, right? Like, I think he is what he is as a corner, and like the quicker you get to that second contract, the better. And you know, we all expected this all year. So like, it doesn't change a lot from the things you and I have talked about and what we expect from the corners next year. I do think it's interesting. You know, we talked about Zion Tracy and Elliott Washington and, you know, the kind of baptism by fire in that game. Mm-hmm. Like, they held up well at times, and other times they got torched, and like, but that's part of it, right? Like, that's part of growing. That's
part of the process.
Yeah. Like, honestly, baptism by fire might be the best way to learn. Like, this is not, it's not a criticism to say that that's what happened. It's more of saying like, you know, those guys were tested a ton and they got high level reps early on. And we could look back by midseason next year and say those reps against Trey Harris were the most valuable reps they got. And they could end up looking really good for it. So I just think it's going to be interesting to see which of those guys emerge if they get a corner from the transfer portal, if that becomes a thing. Mm-hmm. Feel pretty confident that Cam Miller is going to be pretty good next year. Tracy and Washington will have to step up into those roles, but they have options
Collins
there.
Collins is still kind of in the mix, floating around out there.
He is on the roster.
Again, someone that, God, for a second I thought you said he isn't on the roster. I was like, what did I miss during my time? No, he is on the roster. You know, I think that's the, because when I was talking to Terry Smith after the game on Saturday, that's what I asked him about, you know, the young corners and this experience. And he said, listen, like, paraphrasing here, he's like, we have to learn from this. And like, Saturday was the reason why these guys have to be able to see how much they need to grow between now and next season. And I think
they need the receivers, by the way, to be good in the off season, in the spring, so they can get those reps that they need.
You know how many people we're going to be asking in the spring, John, hey, who's winning more reps, the corners or the wide receivers? That's going to be, we're going to be insufferable, but with that.
And by the way, I don't know how much info we're going to be able to get from that anyways. Cause like, if people say the corners, is it that these young corners are okay, they're stepping up, or that the receivers haven't stepped up? If they say it's the receivers, is it that the receivers have been really good, or that the corners haven't stepped up yet? So,
and it's like,
we're going to ask as we should, but like, I don't know what the answer is based on that information.
Yeah. And then like, oh, this guy's the takeaway king. And then it's like, all right, well, who was throwing the pass, you know? And then you have that whole thing to unpack, and people spiral about the quarterbacks, and it is what it is. But yeah, I do think what this defense looks like next year, we know it's going to be different. Without Adisa Isaac, again, you talk about leaders, without Adisa Isaac, without Chop Robinson, without Kalen King, that's a big one, which is why I do think Devon Elise announcing his plan to return, which I guess that's year six, right? COVID year?
Yeah, year six. This is the COVID year.
Announcing his return for 2024, I think is significant from a play perspective. but also from that leadership perspective. I mean, he's somebody who we saw this year really take on that role for the defense, for the D-line in particular. So that it's a nice little boost, I think. They're one that I know he had said in the lead up to the bowl game, he'd let us know after the game at some point. And wide receiver Wednesday was that point.
That's right. And I think you mentioned it, like the leadership and stuff is going to be huge. You talked about it earlier, like not knowing who the voices are going to be. There's one, right? Like he's very vocal. He's a guy that guys have rallied around in the past. I think he's going to be crucial from that standpoint. We've seen that for as good as the 21 recruiting class was, there's not a lot of vocal guys in that group, or at least not yet. I think Denied Dennis Sutton absolutely is going to be one of those guys and kind of already is one of those guys. But you're not seeing like the vocal aspect of it from everyone in that regard. And I think that's going to be interesting to see how that develops. I think KJ Winston has a chance to do that. He has generally been a lead by example guy, but there's some fire there to how he plays that could make you think that will come out eventually. But yeah, they need these type of leaders, and that's not to discount what Ellis can do on the field too, because he should be a starter next year and he should be good, right? Like he should be really helpful for them. And someone that can solidify the defensive interior, give a little bit of pass rush, but it's really more about run stopping there, and be a good, a good sixth year player who probably can play in the NFL the road. I don't think that's outside the realm of possibility at all. I wouldn't be surprised if he got drafted next year, at the very least a UDFA and all that. But yeah, I think this is a good opportunity for him to come back, whatever the NIL situation is like. You take what you can there and take advantage of these opportunities when you know you can get that. And I think he's going to be really good. Like, I think he's going to be an impactful player who maybe sets the tone for this defense from the interior.
I do. I think that's a good choice of words there. Sets the tone. I was just pulling up the snap counts for the season while you were talking, John. So I wasn't zoning out. I promise. At least this time. But right. Devon Allees played 299 snaps this season, which if you look at Penn State's D-line, Zane Durant, especially along the interior, Zane Durant, 316 snaps, Hakeem Beamon, 330. So you have that. You mentioned Denied Dennis Sutton. He played 429 snaps this year, which you compare that to the rest of their defensive ends. Adisa Isaac was at 387. Obviously, Chop Robinson missed some time, opted out of the bowl game. Chop was at 298 snaps. But you talk about tone setters, which I think is really important with Devon Allees. Leadership, also super important. But when you hit on Denied Dennis Sutton, John, there was something that you and I both took note of during the pregame warmups on Saturday. This guy's intense, right?
Yes.
Everybody else is just kind of warming up, going through stretches in their, their clothing and this and that. This dude's got a helmet on. He looks like he's just ready to go play right then and there. And I know from, I remember talking to him when he was a recruit, and just he's one of those people that when you talk to them, you can just feel their intensity. And I don't know how else to describe it other than that. Like, there's somebody who you can tell playing football and playing football well and being highly critical of himself on the field. Like, it matters to him and it means a lot. Like, there's just certain people when you talk to and they convey that. And he's one of those people who I think is going to have a master 2024 season, monster 2024 season. Gosh, I'm losing it.
Yeah, it is. Listen, it has been a long week, but he is, the guy on this defense next year, right? I think he's probably their best defensive player. I've said before, him and KJ Winston both are going to be in that category. And I think he's got a chance to have an absolute, you mentioned it, a monster year, and really shine. And honestly, like, he's one of those guys, enjoy him while you can, Penn State fans, because if he plays like I think he can next year, it might be his last one on campus. And it will, every bit of it will be earned. Like you said, that dude means business all the time. You mentioned the helmet, like you're right. Like, these guys are out there in like t-shirts and with their football pants on and everything, but he's out there in the same, but also with a helmet on going through reps. So constantly trying to get better, constantly focusing on this, trying to figure out what he can do to improve. And from what I know, it's been like that for a very long time, a very, very driven person.
Yeah. And I think that's the, you look at, again, the leadership piece to this, who leads these teams in the Warner workouts, because in a couple weeks here, John, I'm sure we'll be getting those coaching staff tweets, winter workout, guy of the day, whatever they call them, whatever team player of the day. I will not be keeping track of any of those, but I do know either. That they go out because it is what it is. But we probably won't hear from James Franklin for probably at least a month. Usually in February, we hear from him with the early signing period. Typically, spring ball starts in March after the team and everyone leaves for spring break. So we are finally, dare I say, kind of catching a breather here on Wide Receiver Wednesday. But as we know, anything can and will happen this offseason because that's how this sport works. And John and I will be here on the Nittany Dispatch to bring you up to speed with whatever is happening throughout the offseason. And even if nothing happens, I'm sure we will still have Penn State football things to discuss because, as you said, John, 2024, it's a big year. It's an interesting year, critical year, and we have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, and, you know, if you have things you want us to talk about, let us know. We are both on our Twitters. We see these kind of things. Reach out to us over email. Audrey is at asnyder@theathletic.com, right?
That is it. I've gotten all of your mean emails, John. I've gotten all of them.
I just wanted to make sure they were coming through. I am jsauber@centerdaily.com for email. So if you guys have ideas, by all means, send them our way. We are open to those types of things. But no, we'll have you once a week unless stated otherwise, pretty much the rest of the way until we get back into season form, which we'll be here before we realize it, and you and I will be booking travel once again, which is something that I actually need to get on top of now.
Booking cross-country travel this time, yeah.
Yeah. It'll be a lot of fun, though, and I'm very much looking forward to it. This is an offseason that is going to matter a lot for, I think, the trajectory of Penn State football and how I think it's perceived. And obviously, everyone that's listening is a fan. Like, this is an important year, and it's not a great way to end 2023, but as I said before the game, like, the result doesn't matter as much as what it looks like and what it means for next year. And I think all of this now is about what it means for next year, next season, I should say. It is 2024 already. But I think that is a good place to leave it for now. As I said earlier, feel free to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It always helps us out. The 5-star ratings are fantastic. If you're listening on YouTube or watching on YouTube, go ahead and click that like and subscribe button down below. That would help us out quite a bit. You can find Audrey on Twitter at oddsnyder4. You can read all of her writing at The Athletic, and same for me at centerdaily.com and at John Sauber with no H in it. No H in John, to be clear, on Twitter. That's a good place to leave it. Like I said, though, thank you for tuning in. Have a great day.